Hey, everybody, welcome to The Briefing Room. On this Thursday, I'm Devin Dwyer in Washington with our Deputy Political Director, Mary Alice Parks, political reporter, Johnny Verhovic. Great to have you with us today. Some breaking news out of North Carolina. We've been talking about it all week. It's the only outstanding race from the 2018 midterm campaign that is still undecided, and it's been wrapped up in controversy over allegations of voter fraud. The Republican there, Mark Harris, won the race by 900 votes. Then these allegations came out. The Board of Elections there in North Carolina has been investigating, and Johnny, you have been on the case from the beginning. Right. Today, a blockbuster headline just breaking moments ago, we could have a new election.
It's hard to understate how many bombshells we've seen in the last 3 days. Yesterday, you had Mark Harris's son come out and basically say, look, I warned my dad.
Mark Harris is the Republican.
Exactly.
Candidate.
Mark Harris, the Republican congressional candidate.
Who initially declared victory.
Exactly. His own son came out yesterday and said, look, I warned my dad that there could be some illegal activity. Now you had Mark Harris come out today and basically say, look, you know, I heard what my son was saying, but I just decided to go forward. And then this unbelievable revelation that Mark Harris just last month had two strokes and it has struggles with memory recall. And now he is calling for a new election in North Carolina, which is a huge development.
And let's take a listen to Mark Harris. Here's a picture of Mark Harris, the man who was in the hot seat today, the man at the center of the controversy. He says he didn't know anything of the alleged fraud that took place. But just moments ago, he said he's heard enough and now thinks there needs to be a new election. Let's listen to him.
Neither I nor any of the leadership of my campaign were aware of or condoned the improper activities that have been testified to in this hearing. Through the testimony I've listened to over the past 3 days, I believe a new election should be called. It's become clear to me that the public's confidence in the 9th District seat general election has been undermined to an extent that a new election is warranted. Mr. Chairman.
All right, so there was Mark Harris, the Republican in the 9th District of North Carolina, saying he wants to have another election. Let's go now to North Carolina, where our friend Jonah Kaplan, political reporter at ABC affiliate WTVD, has been covering this all along. Just came out of the hearing. Jonah, give us your big takeaway. How significant was this news from Mark Harris?
Well, I think everyone is shell-shocked. I think for the past several weeks, I mean, dating back to Election Day, the party line from Mark Harris all the way up to North Carolina GOP Republican leadership has always been certify the race. Even if there was fraud, it was not enough to taint the entire election. There are more than 200,000 people that voted down there. So even if you took out all these absentee ballots that were affected, Mark Harris still should have won. The fact that he went up there today, Mark Harris, who, again, for weeks, for months, had been so confident saying, we're going to certify this race, I'm going to go to Washington, for him to come out today and say a new election would help restore voter confidence, it's just the latest bombshell in 4 days of a dramatic political thriller.
And there are some pretty significant, Mary Alice, national implications here. Democrats, let's remember, in the midterm campaign won a huge increase in their majority in the United States House. This is a seat that had been a longtime Republican seat. Now it's up for grabs again. What's sort of the big takeaway on the big picture?
Look, big picture, the American people have been distrustful, skeptical of elections more and more. The trend is to wonder if there's fraud, wonder if there's cheating, and question the process in a way that we haven't seen before in this country. And this is the kind of case that gives American voters who are skeptical of the process reason to be so.
And it's sort of ironic, right? Republicans have typically been the ones to sort of sound the alarms about allegations of fraud. And here in this case,
right, Republicans have made claims that people vote that shouldn't be able to vote, people that aren't registered or that aren't even citizens. And here we have a Republican candidate that's paying a consultant to stuff ballots, to bring in ballots, pay people for ballots, fill out ballots for people. This is a very classic case of cheating. Everyone now seems to be admitting that. Wow. And the consequences get to, can Americans feel confident in their electoral system? And what should the ramifications be and the punishment be for this level of fraud?
And Jonah Kaplan, what are the mechanics for actually holding another election? And does this seal the deal? Does Mark Harris calling for one basically make it simply a foregone conclusion that we're now going to have a new election in the 9th district?
Well, it certainly throws the weight all behind that. If there was any doubt before, it seems like the Board of Elections, who is made up of 3 Democrats and 2 Republicans, will most certainly ratify that and make it official. Previously, it would mean it would go right to a general election. But interestingly, in a bit of a foreshadow, late last year, Republicans in the state General Assembly, the state legislature, passed a bill saying if there is going to be a new election, there has to be a new primary first, giving Republicans an opportunity to get a new candidate in there should this have gone. It's unclear at this point. Remember, Mark Harris, in his announcement today, not saying he wouldn't run for re-election or run for election, but rather he just supports a new election. And by the way, North Carolina now has 2 open seats. In a completely unrelated case, we just had the passing of Walter Jones. So now we have more than 1 million North Carolinians, 1.4 to be exact, without any representation in Washington, D.C.
Wow, Joan, it's incredible. Jonah Kaplan, so great to have you with us again for a second day in a row. Terrific reporting. Appreciate you with WTVD in North Carolina. Thank you so much. And Johnny, just remind us, because you've been studying the nuances of this, is anyone going to be criminally liable for this behavior in this sordid case?
Right. So that's a different question. And the man kind of at the center who's allegedly behind this entire voter scheme could very well face criminal charges. There is an investigation in the Wake County District Attorney's Office, and he's right at the center of that. Of that investigation. And so this is ongoing, and I'll definitely keep an eye on it.
Oh, thank you.
But it definitely isn't something that's normally done in this country. We don't normally get redos in elections. It is
so
unbelievable in
the midterm election as well, right? It's going to be fascinating. Johnny, thanks so much. You got to get back to it. The hearing is still underway. We'll get back to that later as well. Meanwhile, let's turn to another sort of bizarre case, a criminal case with big implications here for Washington, D.C., out of Maryland. This one involving a Marine veteran and Coast Guard lieutenant stationed here in the nation's capital, arrested overnight on suspicions of being an espoused extremist. In fact, authorities today said that he was actually a terror threat, real-time terror threat. Here's the man, Christopher Paul Hassan. And just moments ago, he was brought in for a detention hearing in district court in Maryland. Our Allie Rogan is there at the court and has the latest for us. Allie, some pretty scary stuff in this charging document, including the fact that Hassan allegedly targeted prominent Democrats in Congress and media figures.
That's exactly right. So, Devin, this Coast Guard lieutenant was found researching on his work computer some previous acts of domestic terrorism, which prosecutors say he was using as a basis to determine what he would do. He also amassed at least 15 guns, 1,000 rounds of ammunition. He was stockpiling prescription opioids and steroids in preparation for this attack. He had also compiled, as you mentioned, a list of lawmakers and cable news hosts who he had expressed a desire to assassinate. Some of them included presidential candidates like Elizabeth Warren. He had talked about Senator Richard Blumenthal, Beto O'Rourke, who was is a potential presidential candidate. So he had also researched things like which public officials have a security detail following them and where you can find large groups of members of Congress or other public officials in D.C. Where can you go and see them? So it was clear that he was planning something. Now, Devin, he has been arrested only on the charges related to his gun and drug possessions. He has not been arrested on any charges yet pertaining to domestic terrorism. So today, the judge said that he does reach that threshold of being a threat to the community such that he's going to spend at least the next 2 weeks in federal custody. But the judge said that after those 2 weeks, the defense team for Hassan can return to court and try to re-argue the case for his release, Devin.
Allie Rogan for us at Federal Court in Maryland. Thanks so much for that reporting, Allie. And Mary Alice, this is sort of part of a sort of disturbing pattern of extremists, alleged terrorists of late in the past year here in the United States, of sort of domestic terrorists, homegrown terrorists, non-Islamic terror, if you will. And, you know, I'm remembering the pipe bomber of just a few months back who was sending pipe bombs to media organizations, members of Congress as well.
Right, and the attack on the Jewish synagogue. Mm-hmm. There's a scary trend in this country of white nationalism. We've seen that played out, and we've seen the Justice Department and members of Congress have to talk about a real violence and a real violent threat coming from self-identified white nationalists in this country.
And the Trump administration certainly is under pressure to address that. The new Attorney General, Bill Barr, will be under pressure to address that as well, as he is now just on the second day on the job. certainly a big case to confront. Let's shift gears again now. Speaking of terrorists, another fascinating story that our team has been all over. This one out of Syria and the so-called ISIS bride. This is a woman who was born and raised here in the United States, went to Syria to join the fight. And now she wants to come back to the United States. And the president is weighing in, saying he is not going to let her in. This is 24-year-old Hoda Muthanna. You see her there with her son. She was born here. She had a U.S. passport for some time. But now the Trump administration making clear she cannot come home. Let's bring in our State Department reporter, Connor Finnegan, who has been getting to the bottom of this. We don't have Connor Finnegan, okay? Sorry about that. Thought we did. So Mary Alice,
Interesting to me. Sorry, I interrupted you, Devin. Interesting to me that she isn't saying she wants to come home and just have everything be hunky-dory here. I mean, she's talking about serving time, paying her debt to society, understanding the unbelievable legal implications of having rejected her country and fought actively against her country as a combatant, as an enemy of the state. Whatever you think of this one case, if you're sympathetic toward this one woman or not at all, there are unbelievably interesting legal ramifications. We're talking about actually a few thousand women and children like her with a bunch of different nationalities around the globe and interesting questions about what happens to them now.
Yeah, and in this case, she was born the daughter of a diplomat who was on U.S. soil, and so there's sort of a debate right now over when was she born? Was her father still a diplomat at the time, or had he just let those credentials lapse? The difference matters, because if you're a foreign diplomat and give birth to some children here on U.S. soil, they don't automatically become U.S. citizens, as would normally be the case under the 14th Amendment. You would be a citizen of your home country. But she's arguing that her father had simply let go of his diplomatic status, therefore she is a U.S. citizen. She did have a passport renewed as recently as 2014, so there's going to be a legal battle, I imagine.
And a legal battle with her son.
Exactly. She's speaking out to our James Longman, who caught up with her over in Syria. This is what she had to say about her ISIS-inspired past and what she wants to do now. Take a listen.
There must be an element, a sense of regret in you and sorrow and remorse. Do you feel those things?
Definitely, it's not Islamic at all. I believe that 100%, and anyone that says so, I will fight against it.
And now you want America to come and get you?
I hope so, yeah. I went to some of my friends and asked them, what do you think about going back, basically, to your country? And they were just mind blown, basically. They were like, how could you think of that? Why would you say something like that crazy? They thought it was disbelief to go back. And I was kind of saddened that no one was on my side, basically. And at that point, I really did want to go back, but I had no help on my side at all.
An incredible interview by our James Longman. It's been running all day long on ABC News Live. Fascinating stuff.
Wow.
And you know, I'm struck by, Mary Alice, before we move on, that sort of the tone-deaf nature of her answers.
Yeah.
I don't think she grasps how she's being received here in the United States. Someone who went over, joined ISIS, tweeted some pretty horrific threats against people,
right,
fought alongside these ISIS fighters, and now she says simply, just let me back in. I've given it all up.
It's hard to make sense of it, hard to obviously sort of wrap your head around,
yeah,
at all. But I still think it's going to be deliberated in the courts, in conversation around this country. We have a system of laws here, and where else would you try,
right,
a combatant?
It's going to be interesting to see where this goes, and we do expect that her attorney, she has hired an attorney, will be filing suit against the Trump administration to let her back in the country. So to be continued on that story.
Yeah.
Finally today, some dramatic developments happening this afternoon over at federal court here in Washington, D.C. This involves President Trump's former confidant and ally, Roger Stone, who's pleaded not guilty to charges of witness tampering, obstruction of justice, and lying to the FBI and the special counsel's probe. He has been back in court today for a strange reason, Mary Alice. It's because he posted an Instagram photo with a bullseye symbol of the judge who is hearing his case. This is a wild one.
Yeah, a wild one. It feels like a no-brainer. Don't look like you're threatening a judge who holds the cards here. I mean, Roger Stone may be digging his own grave. That Instagram clearly was not received well by the court.
Yeah, and he was on the stand today for several minutes. Here's a picture of the judge, Amy Berman Jackson. She was questioning Roger Stone today about who posted the picture, why he posted the picture, what the meaning was. He gave sort of contradictory answers,
yeah,
and the judge is weighing perhaps expanding the gag order against him in this case, preventing him from talking, even potentially slapping him with some contempt sanctions, some penalties there.
Yeah, she's the one with the power here, and I don't think she liked being the target.
Yeah, so we will see where that goes. Finally today here in the briefing room, on a lighter note, some animal news, and we'll bring in our resident tortoise expert.
Really? That's why you were looking over here? Can you hear me? Animal news?
You know, you may know Justin Fischel is the head of our White House in Capitol Hill.
That's right.
He's also a connoisseur of turtles and tortoise
animals. I'm a tortoise lover.
You're a tortoise lover.
I am, yeah. We have a pet tortoise at home. We'll get to that later, but
there's some big tortoise news today. Everybody needs
big
to be aware
news.
Of.
Everybody knows tortoises because of the Galapagos tortoise. That's the giant tortoise. There's all sorts of tortoises. There's little ones. We have a little one. The giant tortoise, the big news today, is on Fernandita Island in the Galapagos. They discovered or they found a tortoise that they hadn't seen for 100 years. So that's pretty exciting. And they've identified
it.
Is
that it right here?
Yeah, that's the one. It's a female. So
she's more than 100 years old?
She's not only have they not seen one of these tortoises
for 100 years. Or one of the species. They live to be really old, right?
Exactly. This species.
They thought it was extinct.
Okay,
right.
Okay.
They thought
not
it was extinct.
Not this individual tortoise.
But this individual tortoise happens to be over 100 years old, they believe.
Uh-huh.
You know, tortoises have had it rough over there on the Galapagos. It's not that easy to be a tortoise. On this particular island, they believe that they succumbed to lava flows because there's such an active volcano there.
But also you found that they've succumbed to rats?
Well, that's the other thing. The big problem they had is when fur traders came over there, when humans came over there looking around, they would actually take tortoises with them, for one thing, because they live for so long, they live without water and food, so they'd keep them on their ships and then eat them.
Ooh.
And also when they came over, they brought rats, which ate all the eggs. Huh. So the tortoises had a really tough shake. But this is great news. And
how cute it is.
And by the way, I do want to show you my personal tortoise, my family pet. His name is Sarge.
Uh-huh.
He's a Hermes tortoise.
Yeah. Sarge.
That's him dancing to Cardi B in our living room. That's Sarge. He's my little buddy. Me and the kids enjoy him very much. I would say to anybody out there wanting a pet tortoise, you know, you do have to be very careful. It's a nasty little pet trade, and they can get diseases if they're not brought over properly.
This is a PSA.
So, yeah, it is. I mean, people, you have to respect the tortoise. You know, we got to protect them. He's about six.
All right.
Well, Sarge, because he looks like a helmet.
He may outlive you.
He could. I may have to will him to my children. But it's going to be a problem because I'm the only one who takes care of him at the house. So I don't know if Drew's going to want him in his dorm room, you know? We'll see.
Well, our resident tortoise correspondent, great to see you
today. And all
other
things. I'd be happy to be back about other more important things.
Yes, there's a lot. But it's nice to have a little bit of a lighter subject.
We can't all be inside the bubble. We've got to get out. We're normal people. We do other things.
We do.
Actually, I don't know if this makes me more normal or not, but...
The jury will be out on that. Tweet us if you have an opinion on that.
Or if you also own a tortoise.
Yeah, I think we need to wrap Instagram. I got tortoise videos up there too.
We're done.
Okay, thank you so much for joining us here in the briefing room. We'll be back here tomorrow, 3:30 Eastern Time. Justin Fischel, Mary Alice Parks, I'm Devin Dwyer. We'll see you then.